Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Two Guys, Three Consoles podcast. My name is Matt Leach, also known as The Leachman, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jeremy Fowler, also known as J-Monster. Hey, J-Monster.
Hello. How you doing?
Not too bad. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm good.
Here we are again on episode 4.
Yeah, so good to be back.
It's going well.
Yeah.
We're excited to record every week so far. Yeah. Long may that enthusiasm continue.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been good. So we're going to kick off straight away here with any gaming news.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you go first because I don't even know what you're going to talk about. So
okay, I've got a couple of bits. Okay. So my first one is Forza Horizon 5 coming to other platforms. I can't remember if we mentioned it already on a previous episode.
Possibly. I did see something about this or hear about it on a podcast that I listened to.
Well, I've seen a bit more about it. So coming to PS5.
Yep.
PS5 version will have crossplay
with Xbox. And PC.
So you can play with other people on other platforms. Also heard about, is it going to potentially look even better than it does on the Xbox already on the PS5 Pro?
Yeah, it may well do because it's more powerful. That's interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, is Forza Horizon 5 the one that's set in England or is that 4?
No, it's 4.
4.
5's in Mexico. Apparently it's being ported by Panic Button, who I don't know if you know of, but they've done a bunch of Switch ports, and a lot of the really impressive Switch ports were down to them, like things like Doom Eternal and things like that, they ported to the Switch.
Yeah.
So a lot of the, I guess what you would call impossible ports, Panic Button have been in charge of getting onto the Switch. So it's good to see them doing some stuff from other platforms as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Trust them, or Microsoft, should say, obviously trust them to do this version. I don't know if it's got a release date yet. Is it just summer?
Right, okay. I mean, I did play Forza Horizon 3 or 4. I can't remember which one it was, on the Xbox One X when I had that.
Yeah.
So I've not played it on the Xbox Series X that I've got. Just not
probably
played
before.
It. Yeah.
So I didn't think it was a 360 game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so it must have been 4 then. Mm. I did enjoy what I played because I thought it was quite a slick interface and it looked like a really decent game. So... Mm-hmm. Good it's come to PlayStation so other people can have a go on it who haven't got Xbox or PC.
Yeah, it's very much sort of Xbox sort of loosening their grip. There won't be any sort of Xbox exclusive left if they carry on in this fashion.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do, Microsoft, with the Xbox brand, whether it becomes like, you know, if there is going to be a next bit of hardware, which I think there will be.
Yeah, I mean, they've said that they're not doing a Sega and going like third party. They're going to continue to make consoles. But the last time I heard any numbers, the Series X numbers were not good at all. So maybe they're just not that first about whether they sell that many actual machines themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about the services for them, I think.
Mm, yeah. They're very much all focused on the Game Pass, aren't they?
Yeah. It's definitely going to be interesting to see what they do. But yeah. So that's a good bit of news. Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you got?
So Sony have dropped the PSN account requirements for some PC games.
Hmm.
There was quite a lot of noise from PC gamers when they launched, I think it was Helldivers 2.
Helldivers 2, yeah.
There was a lot of noise from PC gamers, like, why have I got to make a PSN account? No, I'm already logged into a Steam account or whatever, you know. So it's interesting that they've done that, but what they've also done is instead of now like punishing you for not having a PlayStation account, you get bonuses when you create a PlayStation account. Like actual bonuses for the game.
Right.
Like for example, let me have a look here. Oh, it doesn't really say. So they've not alluded to what these bonuses are yet, but apparently you do get some kind of bonus when you create. You get extra, like extra content or something. But probably
game specific.
Yeah, I think it is, but it'd be like cosmetic, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be anything like extra like that. For example, if you create it, they give you for Spider-Man, they give you the Spider-Man 2099 black suit and the Miles Morales 2099 suit in Spider-Man 2, for example.
Mm.
So that's an example. So it'd be cosmetic stuff, but it's still, you know, it's decent. I'm glad that they've done that because... You know, we're in the age now where you have to have some kind of account to access your content, no matter what you're using, you know.
I mean, if you're playing online on console, you're going to be paying to play, and you'll need whichever of 3. Like, you know, if you're playing online with Switch, you need an NSO account, as much as that's a lot cheaper than the others. If you're playing online on PlayStation, you need a PSN account, and playing online on Xbox, you need Game Pass or Game Pass Core, it's now called, you know, the new name for Xbox Live Gold. Yeah. So whichever, unless you're, you know, neither of us are particularly PC guys. If you're a PC player, you're probably used to playing online just for free.
Yeah.
Free, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
But on console, you basically have to pay to play online, whatever you're playing on.
And it's not limited just to consoles either. I mean, for example, anyone who's got a smartphone has to set up some kind of account to use that piece of technology. You have to have a Google account or some kind of account to log in and set up a phone. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? The Apple ID, set the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Most of the Android phones require a Google account. It doesn't have to be a Google email address, but a Google account set up. So no matter what bit of technology you're using, you know, you have to have some kind of online account to interface with your content, no matter what it would be. So it's just the way of the modern world is. But to make it easier for people to access content and games on PC, then why not? It makes sense. I think they went a bit harsh with Helldivers and said, no, you've got to do this, otherwise you can't play the game. It's a bit off, isn't it? It's like you want to play.
Apparently they lost 95% of their player base at that point.
I'm not surprised, you know, to force somebody to say you must do this, otherwise you can't play the game. It's like, it's a bit, reminds me of when I first got the new version of SimCity. Oh God, it must be 10, 12 years ago now.
Right.
You could not access it. You couldn't even play it unless you logged in with an EA account. And the launch day was a disaster because nobody could play it because the servers just fell over.
Right.
And it was like that for a week. And by that time, I bought the full game and I hadn't played it in a week because the servers were down, and I never went back to it. I've never played it. I just recently downloaded the EA app on my laptop, and SimCity is sitting there, so potentially I could play it now. All these years later, I could play it because I did like a good SimCity, but I'll have a look at it and see whether it's worth playing maybe. But that's my bit of news. If it was
I've got one more.
Yeah.
Weirdly, it's more kind of, the story is no news rather than news.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit niche because it's about Football Manager. Football Manager, the diehard players quite often tend to play that and not a lot else.
Yeah.
I think I'm in the minority. It does actually play other games as well, but I think Football Manager was my most played game on Xbox last year.
Yeah.
So they usually tend to release an annual new version, the same as FIFA do. And that's usually in November, but they've announced that they're completely redoing the game, doing a new game engine, new gameplay, all things like that. And it was supposed to be out in November. Then they pushed it back a little bit, so it was going to be late November. And then they did a big delay, saying it's not coming till March. And they were supposed to do a big gameplay reveal trailer at the end of January. And January has been and gone, radio silence, nothing at all.
Wow, okay.
And it's Sports Interactive are the developer, Sega are the publisher, and apparently their deal with Sega, you know, for them to get paid, is that they have to release a game every year. So it has to be out by the end of this fiscal year, which is, what, end of March?
End of March, yeah.
But because the time scale when they were supposed to be releasing this trailer for the new gameplay, for this new version, has been and gone, and the developer said literally nothing. From what I understand, the sort of hardcore Football Manager, like the forums and things like that, are losing their minds at the moment, thinking like, is the game going to get canned? Well, are the developer going to close because they're not, you know, they haven't released anything like they would normally do in the timescale when they do, you know, how are they still paying their staff? If they've not released the game in November like they normally do, and they're not releasing anything till March, or possibly not.
Not releasing at all, dear.
Yeah, I think just the community just wants to know what's going on. Is it still coming in March? Are they just skipping straight to Football Manager 26? Like, what's going on? Nobody knows.
Yeah, it's just been radio silence.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, someone once described Football Manager to me as Excel with graphics.
Yeah. So
I don't know how true that is because I've never played it.
Right. I should probably give shout-outs. There's Aaron, Joe, and Dan are my friends that are all hardcore Football Manager fans. And one of them, their girlfriend, will literally walk into the room and be like, oh, you're playing Spreadsheet the Game again then.
Spreadsheet the Game, yeah. That's what I've heard it described as before.
Yeah.
So it's very much about the management side of it, isn't it?
And you don't control the players physically with the pad yourself like you would be on FIFA. Like Jose, my Spanish flatmate, walked in once when I was playing it, and he was like looking at the screen and the player's moving and saw the pad was on the side on the sofa next to me. And he was like, what are you doing? You're using a Jedi mind trick to play this game or something.
Jedi mind trick.
Love it. That's awesome. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that one. See if that actually happens or not. That's interesting. The bit of news, that one, yeah. That brings us into what have we been playing.
Yeah, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. I've been playing quite a bit, though. So
cool, that's all right.
Take a lot. This is your spoiler warning for all Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Spoiler warning.
Right, so what, skip ahead four or five minutes if you don't want spoilers.
4 or 5 minutes while I talk about Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
Okay.
So I got the Xbox Series X out of the mothballs and dusted it off and and bought a 3-month Game Pass code from CD Keys.
Nice.
And downloaded the Indiana Jones and the Great Circle and booted it up. The beginning bit is like nostalgia trip.
Yes, the tutorial is incredible.
Tutorial is the opening section of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Almost shot for shot, not quite. Almost. And you actually get to play as Indy in the actual tutorial, which is great. You know, you get to find the temple and go in and grab the idol. It's great. Really good way to
spiders off you.
Yeah, all that
on the way in and all that.
Brilliant, yeah, all that way, and it turns out that Indiana Jones he wakes up. Because he actually gets crushed by the ball. and that's when he wakes up and he's like, oh, it's a dream.
Yeah.
So, which I thought was quite good. So it's set a year after the events of Raiders of the Lost Ark. So in 1937.
Okay.
And so it's set a year. That's a year before Indiana Jones' The Last Crusade. Yeah.
Which was the last film.
Yes.
There's not been any more films since that.
No, there hasn't been any more Indiana Jones films. So, yeah, and the pacing of that section was brilliant. Really enjoyed it. You end up you're actually in the museum, in Marcus Brody's museum with Indy, and there's a break-in, and there's this giant guy that Indy has to fight, and he basically knocks you out, and Marcus wakes you up, and it turns out this giant guy's stolen a cat mummy, which Indy realizes that's what's been stolen. Actually, solved a little puzzle. Gameplay-wise, and then you end up going to the Vatican City. That's where it leads you to. And then the entire game becomes really, the pacing really slows down almost to a halt.
It's really strange. So there's, what, three large areas?
Yeah.
Mainly.
It's very strange.
There's Vatican, Egypt, and then the jungle.
Yeah, I've made
there's a couple of other bits you go to around that, isn't there?
But yeah, I've made it to the end or near the end of the section of Egypt.
Right.
But the first thing they get you doing in the Vatican City is, if you haven't got enough money, run around and get some money so you can buy this camera. And it's like, what?
When you get the camera, the bit we have to take pictures, I found a pain because it's very particular about the angle you stood at to take pictures.
Yes.
And the amount of time I was still looking at the thing I'm supposed to be taking a picture of.
Yeah.
I was like, no, move ever so slightly. 10 degrees to the left or whatever it says.
Yeah, on. It's almost like, I think I've described it to you as like a Skyrim. It's not really like Skyrim, but what I mean by that is you're wandering around looking at your objective, like, how do I achieve this? Oh, you can achieve it by any way you want. And the game doesn't really want you to engage in a firefight with these enemies, especially not in the Vatican City.
I mean, it's got sort of stealth light... sort of
it wants you to do, it either wants you to punch these enemies out
or
completely avoid them, which as Indiana Jones as a character, fair enough, but you would have thought he'd find a clever way to go around them instead of just running past them, which is what I ended up doing. And like shout at you going, hey, you shouldn't be here, and just run a bit more, and then they forget you're there. So it's a bit, and that happens in Egypt as well, in massive open areas, like, hey, come back here. He's like, no, I'm running this way.
I mean, I've heard there's a decent argument that it's the best looking Xbox Series X game.
It does look really good. It almost looks like you're playing a movie, to be fair. Yeah. The game mechanics, like I say, I am enjoying the game, but it's very much go from here, complete this task, come back and see me when you completed the task. That's what I mean by kind of like a Skyrim vibe. In you got to go and see them. You know, but obviously in Skyrim there was massive diversions that you could go do a whole other quest line and then come back later. Which there are side quests in Indiana Jones, but I'm just mainlining the story.
I've only played as far as I'm literally right at the end of the Vatican section. I'm about to get on the airship to go to Egypt.
Yeah.
And start. And I did get a few side quests that I opened up and I had a chance of doing if I wanted to in the Vatican, but I just ignored them.
Yeah. It does warn you when you just before you leave the Vatican City, it's like, oh, I better tie up any loose ends before I go this way. And it does the same in Egypt as well. And that's the bit I'm at. He goes, I better go and see this before I leave. So I was intended to complete it before this we started recording, but I've been playing some other games. So I am enjoying it. I will complete it. Whether I go back and do the side quest stuff, I don't know. We'll see how much I enjoy the game overall. I think it's a solid...
I did enjoy it. It didn't really get its claws into me, and it's really big. It's like 131 gig.
Yeah.
And so because I was sort of running out of space a little bit and wasn't massively wanting to keep playing it, I ended up deleting it. I mean, I might go back to it one day, but
fair enough.
I'm not finishing it.
I mean, I only got Fallout 3 installed on my Xbox Series X, so I played plenty of room on mine.
Fallout 3?
Yeah, Fallout 3, the Xbox 360 version.
What, 15, 20 years old?
Yeah, it's about 15 years old, isn't it? 15, 16 years old. Yeah. But I've got it on there because it's the best looking version outside of the PC. Because it's up-resed for Series X.
Yeah.
And that's why I've got it on there, because I do like a bit of Fallout 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably my favourite of all the Fallout games. So yeah, Indiana Jones: Great Circle, enjoying it. I will finish it and give my opinion on the overall game overall on the maybe the next episode or the one after, depending on how you
finish it. Will you get all 1,000 achievement points, which is equivalent of a platinum?
No, that's not happening. I very much doubt it. It doesn't have quite the same appeal having it getting 1,000 points as it does getting a shiny platinum trophy.
Okay, I mean, I have got 1,000 points on some Xbox games, but I know what you mean. The platinum just seems to add a little bit extra than just getting 1,000 achievement points does.
Yeah, it's more, you know, more of a incentive to get that platinum trophy,
and it's more like a badge of honor sort of thing.
Yeah. So I'll move on to Donkey Kong Country Returns HD.
Nice, on Switch.
Yeah, on the Switch. Fucking hell. This game, I tell you, I played it originally on the Wii. Spoiler warnings, if you care about spoilers for Donkey Kong Country Returns.
15-year-old game.
If you do care about that at all. So Jeremy very kindly gave me this game because he had a digital copy and he sent me the cartridge for it.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks again for that. I've been playing it on and off the last week. I've got to World 8 today.
Yeah, you've gone well past where I got stuck.
I tell you, some of those levels, I don't know whether the developers developed this originally to be intentionally mega hard. I think they did.
Yeah.
Because it is really, some of the levels, literally, it's tearing your hair out.
Is World 8 the last world?
It is. There is a World 9, but it's a secret world that you have to do something specific after you've completed the game to access it.
Those optional.
That World 9 wasn't in the original Wii version. It was in the 3DS version.
I think it got added into the 3DS version, but I never got that far.
Yeah. So it depends. If I complete it and I feel like I want to go for the hidden world, I might do. But after playing this game, I mean, some of those levels, they're typically a world will contain at least one level where you're in a rocket barrel where you have to rocket yourself through the level.
Yeah, you sort of steer a bit.
Yeah, some of them can be quite easy. And the one that's in World 8 that I was doing just before we started recording, it's like you've got to know exactly when to press the button and when not to press the button. It's just a test of endurance. But I do like the Donkey Kong Country games. I've played them ever since the original SNES version came out. I played 1 and 2. I didn't play 3.
Mm-hmm.
I played Tropical Freeze. I didn't play the 3DS version, did I? I can't remember. I don't think I did. And I didn't play the Game Boy versions either. But the mainline versions on the main consoles, I played most of them. And this one, It is a good game, and it looks really good on the Switch, actually. You know, it controls well. I've got no complaints with the controls. It's just you've really got to persevere on the levels when you're getting stuck. You can get the Super Kong to play through the level for you.
But if he does that, it doesn't actually complete the level, does it?
It does complete the level. It just doesn't pick up any of the collectibles. It doesn't pick up the Kong letters or any extras or anything like that. So it will complete the level for you, which I haven't done, but the option is available if you want to. Yeah. So there is that if people are struggling on the levels. And for some of them, I can perfectly understand why they want somebody to play. it can get really, really frustrating. But I'm enjoying it. I will complete it.
I'm guessing you're not bothered about 100% in it because there's obviously no...
When I complete it, I may... It depends how I feel. I may go back and try and get all the Kong letters in all the levels and all the puzzle pieces. They're the main collectibles in each level.
Yeah.
I may do, but it can get... You know, once you've been through the game once, I might have to leave it for a bit and go back another time. So we'll see how I feel about it. But
are you still intending on going back to Mario Wonder?
I will. Once I've completed Donkey Kong Country Returns, I will go back to Mario Wonder and complete that as well. Because that's the next Switch game that I want to complete.
Yeah.
I've only a couple of worlds. I've even completed the first world. I think I've completed the first world.
Right.
But yeah, I will go back and play that because that's a decent game as well.
It is good. I think Mario Wonder is probably a shorter game than Donkey Kong Country Returns, from what I understand.
Yeah. It's not a massively long game. So I will complete that. The last game I'm coming to, and I'm going to spoil this game, is Silent Hill 2 Remake. So this is your second spoiler warning, or third even, for another game that I played. So this game came out early October last year as part of like the Halloween spooky season. Yeah. I don't know. Halloween in America seems to last for a month. It starts at the beginning of October and it ends at the end of October.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't ask me why. They love it over there.
You do. They're really into it. I think over here it's a day and it's done.
So I never played the original Silent Hill 2 on the PlayStation 1. I did not play it. I played the original Silent Hill on the PlayStation 1, but only for like an hour or two because there was all that fog and you couldn't see fuck all.
Is the first one the one where you don't start with a gun? You start with a bit of wood with a nail in it.
That's right. That's the one. And this one, it looks really good. You know, Konami made a really good version of this game. I've got quite far into it. I won't tell you what I've done, but I'll tell you the last bit that I have done, which is where you go. I said it was a hotel to you. It's actually a hospital. There is a hotel in it as well. Actually, this weird, fucked up hospital that with like nobody around apart from the enemies who are dressed up in nurses' uniforms and who are trying to bash your head in, basically.
So the developer's got a really weird name, haven't they?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the developer.
It's like Bloober Games or something?
Something like that. That's right. Yeah. Now, this game, I like a good horror game. Like, I've played Resident Evil games. I've played Evil Within. Mm-hmm. You know, I like a good horror game. This game, it's unsettling to play it because there's a... I can play it with the headphones on, you know, the 3D Sony ones.
Yeah.
And just as you're walking around the hospital, you're literally looking around every corner.
Jumping at all the little noises.
I don't jump scare hardly at all. Right. This game's maybe jump scare three times.
Okay.
And I don't generally jump scare. I know something's going to happen normally before it happens just because you get the vibe. But this game, it has the ability to make me jump scare, which is quite funny. And some of the bosses are just the weirdest bosses I've ever seen in my life. There's a guy called Pyramid Head, and he's got like this big metal... he sticks on it. No idea why.
And a big massive sword, isn't he?
Yeah, something like that.
Axe, I don't know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm quite a ways into it, and I actually completed the hospital, and I've gone to this other dimensional version of the hospital.
Oh.
So it's the same layout, but it's like this weird dimensional thing where these weird creatures are in there, and you've got to solve this puzzle to unlock. A chess. That's the bit where I'm at. I stopped playing that on Sunday. I've not played it since, so I will play some more.
But
I have to kind of be in the mood to play that one. They're the games that I've been playing. What about you?
Okay, so I went back to the second character that I started on Elden Ring.
What kind of build is it?
So that one's an intelligence, because my main character that I've spent like 300 hours with is like a faith incantations build. But this one is intelligence. I've got a magic Uchi that I use if I need to use melee, and then I've got obviously my staff with the Azor Comet.
Spell. The thing right out in Comet down, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and then I've got Rock Sling. It creates like three sort of meteors in the air and slings them at things. That's pretty good as well. And I've got the Renala Moon. You create a moon in the air and then throw it at them. Renala uses it against you when you fight her as well.
Yeah, I think I've seen it used, but I've never had that spell myself. Yeah.
It's quite slow, but if it actually connects with things, it does quite a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did that. I haven't done an awful lot of single player this week. That's pretty much the only thing I've been doing. So for multiplayer wise, the guys I play on Sunday night with, we were playing Dawn 2 because one of them couldn't make it. When you're playing Dawn 2, there's three of you. You have to all be at the same place in the campaign to get in.
Right.
And a mate who was the furthest back is on PS4 still, and the PS4 can only host two players at the same time. It can't host three like the PS5 can.
Right.
So we needed to be in his game to catch him up, but he could only get one of us in to play with him. So it just sort of seemed that it wasn't really working.
You have to be at the same place in the campaign to participate.
Yeah. Me and Kyle were both further ahead than he was, so he couldn't join us because he needed to catch up.
Yeah.
But we couldn't get him to be the host because he only got a PS4. So we had a look at this roguelike mode they've got on it, which is separate from the campaign, called Neighborhood Watch.
Right.
And you get like 5 days, and there's sort of one task to complete per day.
Yeah.
And in the first 4 days, if you complete all the tasks, you get 4 particular like sort of bonuses unlocked for the 5th day. And the 5th day is like sort of like a save yourself from the zombies that are all attacking your hideout sort of thing.
Right.
You have to survive a certain number of waves. And of course, if you've got all 4 of the bonuses, that is very much advantageous when all the hordes attack you at the end. We didn't actually manage to complete it. I think we got to like wave 2 on the 5th day.
It sounds a bit like Left 4 Dead. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, I mean, sort of, but I always thought of Left 4 Dead as more as a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
And Dead Island is sort of more melee-focused. You don't seem to get many guns.
No.
You can craft bullets, but I don't think I found one gun in the entirety of that mode while we were playing it. I don't really think of Dead Island as much as a first-person shooter, even though it is in first-person. Yeah. But yeah, I can see what I mean. I used to like Left 4 Dead. I wasn't great at it, but I liked it. Left 4 Dead 2 came out quite quickly after the first one.
Yeah.
But because it's a Valve game, they never made a third one because Valve, for some reason, have some weird issue with making third games.
Don't they?
Half-Life. And,
yeah.
So I played that. And also, I've got a mate who's got Monster Hunter World, which is the previous Monster Hunter game, came out 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really play online games before, never mind Monster Hunter games. So I've been helping him with that and playing a bit online with him when we get a chance. So, and that's about it. I've really played this week.
Cool. Because we will be playing, or we hope to be playing this weekend, the Monster Hunter beta, don't we?
Yeah, for Wilds. The new one.
So Jeremy's got a copy of the beta from when they did their first, was it last year?
Yeah, it would have been last year, yeah.
Yeah. So they're doing a open beta this weekend and next weekend.
Yeah.
So we're going to be playing it this weekend, I think. You'll probably end up playing it more than I will, but I will definitely jump in. As long as I can download it on the PlayStation 5, it's not available yet.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know why it's not available. I'm sure it will become available. So
we get closer. Are we hoping to play it on a Saturday night?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Yeah, so that's what we've been playing. So it's going to take us into Retro Corner. I'll let you kick this one off.
So mine this week is a game made by Rare for the NES. I think it released in 1991, which was Snake Rattle and Roll.
Right.
And it's like an isometric platformer.
Mm-hmm.
And you play as a snake, either called Rattle or Roll. and you have to eat these little, what do they call it? Like wiggly pigglies, I think they call them.
Wiggly pigglies.
Yeah. And you grow a bit more of your tail each time you eat a wiggly piggly, and you have to get enough tail segments to then weigh down like the way the levels end, it's got like a weighing scales you have to get on, and you have to be heavy enough to weigh down the scales to make the door open.
Right.
Then go on to the next level. And I remember there's a bizarre thing with the first level. If you can get from the beginning of the first level to the end where the door is in like 9 seconds or something, then you get to a rocket, and the rocket will take you straight to the last level.
Right, okay.
And I think this is the game, because it didn't have, there was very few games that had save functions on the NES, wasn't there?
Some had
passwords, but that was generally it. There wasn't many games at all that had battery backup for saves.
No.
I think I left my NES on while we went away for like a weekend or something.
Right.
And came back to find a bit of smoke in the room.
Blimey.
Because the little box, that you know, the adapter that plugs into it, into the wall, had gone bang.
Right.
While we'd been away. So I think I got told off for that. I was like, you could have burned the house down.
Hey, yeah, you could have done.
So there's no more doing that after that. But yeah, it's a really good little game that I used to love. And it's on Rare Replay, if anyone wants to play it. You know, it's on the Xbox these days because Microsoft own Rare.
Yeah.
So it's still available to play. I think the last time I tried to play it, I found that it's really not aged that well. And trying to play it, it's an isometric game, and trying to play it with a modern controller, easier said than done.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that with old games, you do sort of risk when you go back to them, if you've got sort of fond memories of it.
Yeah.
As a kid, and you play, I was like, oh, this isn't that good, or it's just not aged very well.
Yeah.
No, but that's... I loved it at the time when I was like 10 or 11.
Yeah, that's a good one, that one.
Oh, thanks. What's yours this week?
Zach McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders.
Wow, what was that on?
That was originally developed for the Commodore 64.
Right.
But I actually played it on the Atari ST.
Okay. Well, I guess it was going to be Amstrad.
Not an Amstrad one, this one. But I played it on the Atari ST, and I later played it again on the Amiga 500. But this was a Lucas Arts, I think they were called at the time, game. It was the second game they did using the Scum Engine.
Scum Engine.
Yeah, that was the name of the... It was Scum did stand for something. I'll look at it while I'm talking. Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion. Because that was the first game that used it, Maniac Mansion, which I didn't actually play that game, but I did enjoy Zach McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders. The premise is it's a point-and-click game. I think it was either my first or second point-and-click. I can't remember if I played Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade before this one, or whether it was the other way around. I'm pretty sure Zach McCracken and the Alien Mindbenders was the first one.
Right.
And you're in Seattle. And Zach McCracken is a reporter for the Daily, whatever it was, paper. Can't remember the name of the paper. But you're a reporter, and you're trying to uncover a conspiracy that aliens are controlling people's minds using a massive satellite dish that they're up in orbit around the Earth.
Mm.
That's the premise. And you go through the game, and you get some help from various different people. And the puzzle elements of them are quite difficult to get your mind around. Like, for example, you have to get some breadcrumbs for a squirrel that you have to get past in the forest.
Right.
And then the only way you can make the breadcrumbs is by using your waste disposal.
Okay.
So your waste disposal is broken.
Right.
And you have to get parts for your waste disposal unit so you can then put the breadstick in the waste disposal and get the breadcrumbs out of it. Then you can feed it to the squirrel.
Oh, okay.
So that's the kind of thing you have to do in these games, you know.
Kind of click logic sometimes can be a bit...
Yeah. You actually end up going to... I can't actually remember how the game ends, but you end up going to Mars.
Right.
As part of this conspiracy, you get transported to Mars through this portal on Earth.
Right.
And you have to open this ancient temple that's on Mars using a recording that you record earlier in the game on a boombox. And then you play it outside the temple and it opens up. Very Indiana Jones inspired. But it was actually me and my sisters played it, and we didn't like it at first because it didn't make any logical sense.
Right.
So we found some hints for it on how to get through the first puzzle. And after that, we quite enjoyed it.
Mm.
So yeah, exactly. Crack and Alien Mindbenders, one of the first point and click adventure games I ever played. So nice. Really enjoyed that one. I don't know if you can't play it on modern systems. You might be able to get it on good old games on the PC. Yeah, it is on good old games. So you can probably play it through that if you want to have a play of it. I may do, because I want to go back and revisit it. But
there we go.
Yeah, it was a good game, that one. So that leads us nicely into midnight launches.
Yes, this week's subject.
Yeah, you want to explain what it's about?
I just wanted to sort of talk about any sort of midnight launches that we've been involved in the past, whether they be for sort of consoles or specific games, if you've ever been to any, what our experiences were.
Well, I'll go first on this one. Yeah. Mine was not that exciting. I didn't go to many midnight launches. One I did go to for was Halo 3. So I think that was back in 2007. I think.
Right. Yeah.
And Blockbuster was still operating at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a local Blockbuster that I went down to at midnight thinking there'd be a huge queue of people. There was three of us waiting outside Blockbuster for them to open. So I went in, spoke to the guy behind the counter, had a little chat with him. Oh, you'd been really looking forward to this. I'm like, yeah, I loved Halo 1, loved Halo 2. Really looking forward to playing this on the Xbox 360. You know, he's like, great, there's your copy, thank you very much. Went home, booted it up, played it for an hour, went to bed.
That's all right.
So that's my really interesting, not that interesting story about a midnight launch for a game.
Well, at least they did open up and they did have enough copies for all of you.
Yes. I don't think I've been to any other, because you see pictures of the other people, like hundreds of people waiting outside Game in Oxford Street, or you know,
it used to be much more of a thing in America than it did over
there. America, like Virgin Megastore and those kinds of things, you know, for these midnight launches of games, but
yeah,
I never really did it. But so you've got quite an interesting story, haven't you?
I have. So this is 20 years old, and the only midnight launch experience I've ever had was for the Wii back in 2006. And I've got this little invite here because the Wii actually launched technically on the day after my birthday. Right. So we had a party at midnight when we got the Wii, and then I had another normal birthday party the day after. And I think some of this I took from NGC magazine, because they were trying to encourage people to do Wii parties. And some of it's my own words I added to it. So I'm just going to read a bit of it out. You're cordially invited to partake in... who are we kidding with our pretend pomposity? Let's loosen up. After all, I'm not inviting you to a funeral. I'm inviting you to a birth. Most exciting and least messy birth you ever attended. I probably should have said before I started, this was very much written before the Wii launched on what I hoped it was going to be rather than what it actually turned out to be. But
yeah,
you see, the 7th of December 2006 is my 26th birthday. And on the 8th day of this month will be the day the Nintendo Wii lands on our Fair Isle. On this day, as a valid, rabid, and excited Nintendo head slash slightly curious friend who will humour me with my obsession, delete is appropriate, you're invited round to my slightly odd-smelling abode for a multiplayer experience unlike any other. No longer will someone win just because they press some buttons at the right time. No, if I lop your head off, it's because I'm a better sword fighter than you. If I get a headshot, it's because I kept my cool when you fired some blanks. It's about skill. Up for trying the world's first truly interactive console on launch night? If you are, I'll see you there, here. A couple of us will be coming down to Game Station about 11:30 and so on in the 7th to pick ours up. We should be back in time for 12:20. If you've got your own Wii, bring your own personalised Wiimote along. It's what Shigsy would want. Because the experience is, the wheelie momentous life-defining ones are there to be shared. Because it's not about I, and it's not about you. It's about us. Oh, I mean, it's about we. Sorry. This isn't going to be the next gen. This is the new gen. Hope to see you on the other side. Please RSVP. Peace, love, and empathy. Jelly hugs.
Very well crafted, that. And I enjoyed listening to that.
Thank you. I've even got a little picture of the Wii on there. And
yeah, for people who listen to this, Jeremy's holding a picture of his, card that he created. But yeah, that was quite an interesting story, that one, compared to mine, for sure.
Well, yeah, there was like about 25 people at Game Station that we went to and got the Wii from.
Wow.
And there was a bit of hoo-ha because the Wii consoles came in, but the extra Wii remotes did not.
Oh, so how are we supposed to operate them?
It was the day after. Well, like I say, so the Wii that you got with the console was there, but if you bought an extra one, because it was supposed to be much... made of being a multiplayer console, all the extra ones didn't arrive until the day after. So I think it was me and one other friend were both buying ours, the consoles, at midnight launch. Because we had one console each, we had two Wii remotes for that first night.
Yeah.
And came back and played games two-player with, like, about six of us taking turns.
Yeah.
Swapping between. And then I had, like, I think I had three more Wii remotes pre-ordered and went and picked them all up the day after. But of course, that was the day after the party and it was all done by then.
All gone by then, yeah.
So that was typical. But
and how many of those Wii remotes have you got left?
Probably three of them.
Right.
Whether they still work or not is another thing entirely.
It doesn't matter, yes.
I don't really tend to use the Wii much these days. And of course, you've got a Wii U these days. So
Yes. I do have it. And yeah. I keep meaning to go back to Metroid Prime 2 and I haven't done that yet.
No, fair enough.
I will get around to it.
Motion controls are quite hard to go back to if you've got used to not using them.
Yeah, I found it really hard when I booted it up and played it for that hour. I'm like, oh my God, motion controls again. It's been a while. Do you remember the controller they launched for the Wii? I think it was a wired controller. It was an actual Wii. It was almost like the Pro controller for the Switch, but it was for a Wii.
Yeah, you're talking about the Wii Pro Pad, and that's you had to plug it into the Wii remote to make it work.
No, you can plug it straight into the console. Oh my God!
No. Wow. So it had a cord that you plugged into the Wii remote, and that's how it worked.
I never had one. You had to plug it into the Wii remote. That's ridiculous.
So I got mine with Monster Hunter Tri.
Yeah,
because you can't really play Monster Hunter with a Wii remote. Well, I've got at least one friend who did, but I couldn't have done.
God, can you imagine playing that with motion controls?
I think if you use the Wii remote, you didn't actually do much in the way of motion. It was just using the buttons on the Wii
remote. Buttons, yeah.
To play it as a normal sort of pad, but with the Wii remote instead.
Yeah, I do. I remember seeing that Wii Pro pad, but never using one. But I'm glad I didn't now. If you just plug it into the Wii remote, ridiculous.
It is a bit daft.
I'm excited to see about Switch 2, but I don't know if I'm going to get it on launch because I don't know if I'm going to be able to get one.
No.
I think pre-orders have gone live on Shop 2 if you want to pre-order one. Or no, pre-orders interest has gone live.
Yes. You can register your interest.
Yeah.
And that means they do a zero thing they take from your card.
Yeah.
So they take 0p from your card.
Yeah.
And that sort of registers your interest. And then it will change into a full pre-order if you want to be a pre-order later down the line.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
There wasn't really as much issues with the original Switch compared to like the PS5 and the new Xbox. So I don't anticipate there being like a massive shortage.
They said there's not going to be. So maybe I think maybe on launch day or the day after, I'll go down to Argos and buy one.
Yeah, nice.
Probably end up doing that. So we've got a section for this week. It might not be a regular section.
It's a new one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called Hot or Not, which basically means you either we were hot on this game or we were not hot on this game.
Yeah.
And the game that we both came up with this week is a little known game called No Man's Sky. I got this game, I think it was just after launch.
On PS4?
Yeah, PS4. My girlfriend at the time bought it for me. Put it in, booted it up, and played it for about an hour. And I'm like, I don't understand what this game is about. What am I supposed to be doing?
What am I supposed to do? Yeah.
Where's my objectives? What's the gameplay loop? Mm. And it kind of turns out there wasn't one really. It's just about exploration.
I'd say it's an exploration game.
Yeah. It's exploration, cataloguing various creatures on various worlds, learning alien languages.
Mm.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. Didn't really. A lot of people love this game. Love it. There's a whole community around it.
Now.
Yeah, they did now, but launch was pretty disastrous, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I have played it since. There's been three or four major updates for the game.
Yeah, I think they've got fish coming soon.
And I've tried to get back into it, and I just can't. It's not the same game now. It's massively different to when it first launched. But I just bounced off it so hard. Like I played it once for an hour, and I never played it again for like another 3 or 4 years after.
Have you still got it, or did you trade it in?
I've still got it.
All right, okay.
And I think I even got the free upgrade for the PS5 version,
right?
Which I got. Booted it up, played it for 10 minutes, and deleted it. I was like, no, this game is not for me.
So, yeah, I got it at launch as well. They were promising, like, what's his name? Sean Murray, who's the guy from, is it Hello Games?
Yeah.
Made this. And Sony had him doing an awful lot of press pre-launch, and they were promising the world this game, and the majority of the things they promised weren't in the game at launch. Yeah. They may well be now.
I think they are now, and lots more. But yeah, at launch, well,
at launch they definitely weren't. So one of the things they promised at launch was online, and it turned out at launch the online was a load of bullshit and chips. I think when they did finally put online into the game, the first version of online the game had was these little like circle things in the world that you'd go and stand next to, and then if there was another random person stood next to it in their world, you could talk to them through the circle thing. Yeah. And that was online play,
yeah,
apparently. And like you say, there just wasn't any real sort of direction when I played it. They didn't really lead you by any objectives. I think
it's because the content in the game, they didn't really have, there wasn't much there from what I could gather.
I mean, there's a really big galaxy to explore. You could keep flying off to more different planets, and they would have like different atmospheres and different things going on. Some would be poisonous, some wouldn't, stuff like that. But it just didn't really tell you what to do. Like,
yeah.
I think I got a new ship, and I was like, "Oh, that was cool. What can I do with this now then?"
Oh, I can fly it. I can fly it to another planet, and I can land on a planet.
And I can fly it maybe a bit quicker than I could fly there before.
Yeah.
So, like, I've got. I think there's a Switch version. Nowadays.
There is a Switch version now, yeah.
It runs pretty damn well, apparently.
Yeah.
And I've got a friend who plays that, but I traded it in maybe a week and a half after I got it.
Right.
And when I took it in, the guy at Game was like, well, you lasted longer than most. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, we had about 7 people bringing it back the day after it came out.
Wow. That just shows you what a disastrous launch it was. But yeah, it's got quite a big following now.
Yeah.
You know, if you look on forums on the internet, there's a lot of people who love this game, and I mean love it.
You can build bases and do all sorts of things now, can't
you? Do all sorts of stuff now, comparatively. There is an actual, like, campaign, kind of, I think, where you can start. It's got to start a beginning and an end, whereas there wasn't in the original.
Definitely wasn't when we were playing it.
So, yeah, I believe it's a fully fledged. It's now what it should have been on launch, and more so. So,
well, yeah, after 7 years of updates.
Yeah, I don't know if there'll be a No Man's Sky 2. Probably not.
No, they're making something else that's along the same sort of lines, and I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
This new one is like, rather than a galaxy, it's like one big planet, and apparently the planet is massive.
Massive, yeah, that sounds more like it.
Yeah, what it's called now, though. So I guess this falls into the not category for both.
Goes into the not category, this one. Yeah, definitely. Like I say, this might become a regular feature, but we'll be honest about it. We were kind of struggling to come up with games that we both played, where it was hot or not. But we'll see. Maybe this will become a regular feature.
Yeah, but I'm sure we'll find some more if we want to keep this going.
Yeah, absolutely. We did get some show feedback from a guy called Gary Tanner. So shout out to Gary if you're listening.
Yep.
He sent us an email saying that he really enjoyed the first two podcasts. A great mix of current and retro games. Looking forward to the rest. Keep up the good work.
Yeah.
And he was kind enough to send us some artwork that he did himself that we can use ourselves. So we're very appreciative of that. So
yeah, thank very grateful. Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the feedback. I've got other feedback from other people who have been listening to the podcast, and they've been enjoying it.
Yeah.
Which is good. So we're going to keep going, I think. So, yeah, that's really good. Nice of Gary to send us an email. It's the first and only email we've received.
Okay, yeah, only one we've had so far.
We're like, you know, we're receptive to all feedback. So, you know, send feedback in. Leave a review on the podcast, Apple Podcasts, if you want, or on the Spotify. I think you can rate it.
Yeah, so, I think we've got 5 5-star reviews so far on Spotify.
Okay, that's good. I don't tend to use Spotify as much as Apple Podcasts. Just because I don't really. I mean, my daughters use Spotify a lot, but I don't use it that much. So that brings us to the end of our fourth episode. So thank you for listening, if you have been. We're going to say me and Jeremy are enjoying creating these episodes for your listening pleasure, if you are doing so. You can get us at Two Guys Three Consoles on Instagram, and the same on TikTok.
Yeah,
and I believe it's the same on Blue Sky as well. My personal Instagram is at Matt Leach, at Matt Leach 26, that is. And my personal Blue Sky is at Matt Leach 1, if you want to get me on Blue Sky.
My Instagram is J_Monster, and then my Blue Sky is J_Monster, no underscore.
So there should be some content coming out on TikTok and Instagram probably. I've not really seen it in the next few days, just promoting the episode, so have a look at that if you can. And yeah, thank you for listening, and we'll
thank you.
Yeah, we'll see you on the next one.
Bye. Bye. Bye.